In 100 years, no one will remember your name. You are as indistinguishable as grains of sand on the beach. Monarchs see the world through the prism of legacy. Ask Nicholas. He'll tell you the same. What will we leave behind? How will we be remembered? Because whether we are reviled or revered, we will be remembered. Nicholas is a leader. Men are dedicated to him. They follow him naturally. You must see it. I think of Logan and Tommy and James, the way they protected Nicholas, not only because it was their job, but because they wanted to. When he is king, he will better the lives of tens of millions of people. He will lead our country into a new age. He could literally change the world, Olivia. And you would deprive them of him? For what? A few decades of your own happiness? Yes, child. In my book, that makes you selfish. I try to keep it together, but frustration makes me tear my hands through my hair. Because how the hell do you argue with that? So that's it? I ask, crushed. There's no way. At all? She's not angry when she says it, or mean, just final. No, there isn't. I close my eyes and take a deep breath, and then I lift my head, facing her, head on. Then I guess there's nothing left to say. Thank you for speaking with me. I rise and turn to leave, but when my hand is on the door, she calls my name. Yes? I turn back.
I have watched you these last months. I've seen how you are with the staff and the people, with Henry and Nicholas. I've seen you.
From this angle, in this light, the Queen's eyes seem shiny, almost glistening.
I was wrong the day we met when I said you wouldn't do. If things were different, you, my dear, would do beautifully.
Tears rise in my eyes, and emotion lodges in my throat. It's funny. When people are stingy with their praise, it always seems to mean the most when it's given. I dip my head, and bend my knees, and slowly lower into a full, perfect curtsy. I've been practicing. And for all she is, a queen, a mother, a grandmother, she deserves that honor and respect. After the door closes behind me, I take a big breath, because now I know what I have to do.
Chapter 22. Nicholas. The days leading up to the summer jubilee are always fraught with frantic activity and planning. There's a tension in the air, a weight that has to be waded through, because all the things that have to get done cling like leeches. Dignitaries and heads of state come from all over the world and are hosted at the palace. There are photo sessions with the royal family, immediate and extended, and meetings and interviews with the press. The organized chaos grows as the day of reckoning approaches, like the burps and grumbles of a volcano, building up to its apocalyptic eruption. I've gotten through it the way I do every year, with a smile spackled to my face and unspoken words locked safely in my head. But the last 24 hours have been particularly difficult. I say all the right things, do all that's expected, but it feels like a shroud lies across my shoulders, heavy and suffocating. It feels like mourning, like the day surrounding my parents' death, when, in spite of the crushing grief pressing down on every cell in my body, I had to go on, keep walking, head high, one foot in front of the other. I'm determined to enjoy tonight, though, really enjoy it. Olivia's never seen a real ball, with more pomp and circumstance and grandeur than I doubt she can imagine. And I want to soak up her reaction, every smile and sparkle of wonder that lights in her eyes. I'll hoard those moments, keep the memory of tonight close and safe, so I can pull it out and relive it after she's gone. I wait in the morning room of Guthrie House for Olivia to come down, after she's done getting primped and painted. Then I'll escort her over to the main palace, where we'll receive our final marching orders from the decorum police, and the ball will begin. I hear the swish of fabric at the top of the stairs, turn around, and get knocked on my arse. Her gown is pale blue, satin and chiffon, low-cut, with a taste of cleavage, framed by dips and swells that bare her shoulders but encircle her arms. It's an old-fashioned style without being costumey. There's a slash of rhinestone embellishment across the bodice, and the satin hugs her tiny waist, draping down to a skirt that's hooped but not overly large. On one side, the satin pulls up, held with the same gemstone decoration, revealing pale blue chiffon beneath, dotted with jewels. Olivia's hair is pinned up in ornate shiny black curls, with diamond combs winking out between them. Fergus stands beside me, and the old dog practically sighs.
The lass looks like an angel.
No, I say as Olivia reaches the bottom step. She looks like a queen. She stands in front of me, and for a moment we just stare at each other.
I've never seen you in your military uniform, she says,
eyes drifting over me hungrily from head to toe, before settling on my eyes.
It should be illegal.
I'm the one who's supposed to be giving the compliments. I swallow hard, wanting her so much, in every way. You look breathtaking, love. I can't decide if I want you to stay in that dress forever, or if I want to rip it off you right now. She laughs. Simple, elegant diamonds dangle from her tasty little earlobes, but her throat is bare, just like I asked the stylist to keep it. I reach into my pocket and pull out a small, square box. I have something for you. She blushes, before she even sees what's inside. And then, when I lift the lid, she gasps. It's a snowflake, in an intricate spinwheel pattern, laden with 100 small diamonds and sapphires. The diamonds are clear and flawless, like Olivia's skin, and the sapphires are brilliant and deep, like her eyes. Her mouth goes slack.
It's gorgeous.
She fingers the velvet bed, but doesn't touch the necklace, almost as if she's afraid to.
I can't keep this, Nicholas.
Of course you can. The words come out firm, almost harsh. I designed it myself, had it made. I slip it from the box and step behind her, tying the silk choker ribbon around her throat. There's only one in the whole world, just like you. I press a kiss to the back of her neck, then her shoulder. Olivia turns to face me, takes my hand and lowers her voice.
Nicholas, I've been thinking.
Let's go, Googly Eyes 1 and 2. We're late.
Henry, also decked out in full uniform, says as he walks into the room, tapping his wrist.
You'll have time to drool all over each other later.
I lean down and kiss Olivia's cheek. You can finish that sentence tonight. We assemble in an antechamber off the ballroom, while the sounds of the party, the chatter and music and the clinking of glasses, seep like smoke under the door. My cousins are here, Marcus and his brood. After the briefest of greetings, they stay far away from me, and I do the same. I also stay away from any refreshments they've been near, just in case. My secretary, Bridget, claps her hands, giggling and vibrating like the head of a social committee in school.
One more time, just in case. The Queen will be announced first, followed by Prince Nicholas, then Prince Henry, who will escort Miss Hammond into the room.
She turns to my brother.
Everyone will be standing, so you will walk Miss Hammond to the marked spot near the wall, then return to your brother's side for the receiving line. Everyone's got it, yes?
Trumpets blare from beyond the doors, and Bridget nearly bursts out of her skin.
Oh, that's the signal. Places, my lords and ladies, places.
She pauses next to Olivia, squeezing her arm and squeaking.
It's just so exciting.
After she steps away, Olivia laughs.
I really like her.
Then she lines up beside my brother. We talked about it, about Henry escorting her in, the expectations, the traditions. But standing here now, it all just seems so meaningless. Stupid. I turn around and tap my brother on the shoulder. Hey.
Yeah?
Trade with me.
Trade what?
Henry asks. I motion with my finger.
Our spots.
He leans over, looking at our grandmother's back.
You're supposed to follow Granny out. Be second in the receiving line.
I shrug. She won't look behind her. She won't know until you're beside her, and then she'll roll with it. You can handle greeting the guests second. I have faith in you.
That goes against protocol,
Henry taunts, because I already know he's going to say yes. I shrug again.
Fuck it.
He chuckles and looks at me with pride in his eyes.
You've turned my brother into a rebel, Olive.
He taps her hand.
Well done.
Then he switches spots with me. Olivia's arm curls around mine, and her thigh brushes my leg through the fabric of her dress.
That's better.
I sigh, because having her on my arm feels like it always has, like it's meant to be. The ball is in full swing. Everyone's enjoying themselves. The music is less stuffy than in past years. The orchestra mixing renditions of popular music with classical. People are dancing, eating, laughing, and I stand across the room, by myself for a rare moment, watching. Watching her. It's the strangest sensation. The swell of joy in my chest that looking at Olivia always brings. The surging pride I feel as she moves with so much confidence, chatting with the wives of ambassadors, leaders, and assorted royalty, like she's been doing it her whole life. Like she was born to do it. And then the inevitable stab of agony lands, when I remember that she's leaving. That in just another few days, she'll be gone. Lost to me. Forever.
Are you all right, Nicky?
Henry asks with quiet concern. I didn't see him approach, and I don't know how long he's been beside me.
No, Henry,
I say in a voice that doesn't sound at all like mine.
I don't think I am.
He nods, then squeezes my arm and pats my back, trying to prop me up, lend me strength. It's all he can do, because, like I told him months ago, we are who we are. I push off from the wall and walk over to the orchestra leader. We speak for a few seconds, heads bent together. When he eagerly agrees, I head towards Olivia. I reach her just as the opening notes of the song float across the room, and I hold out my hand.
May I have this dance, Miss Hammond?
Understanding dawns on her face, and then adoration. It's the prom song she mentioned, that she loves but never got to dance to. Everything I do. Her head tilts.
You remember it?
I remember it all. Olivia takes my hand, and I lead her out to the dance floor. We've captivated the attention of the entire room. Even the couples already dancing pause and turn our way. As I take her in my arms and lead her, Olivia whispers nervously,
Everyone's looking at us.
People have looked at me my entire life. It's something I've endured begrudgingly, accepted no matter how much it chafed. Except for now. Good. In the early morning hours before dawn, I move inside Olivia, on top of her, with only breath between us. White-hot pleasure coursing and spiking through us both with every long, slow stroke of my hips. It's making love in the truest, purest sense of the word. Our thoughts, our bodies, our souls are not our own. They swirl and blend together, becoming something new and perfect. I hold her face while I kiss her, my tongue sliding against hers, our hearts beating in time. Sparks strike against my spine, tingles of electricity that hint at the shattering orgasm that's building. But not yet. I don't want it to end yet. My hips slow and my pelvis rests against Olivia's, where I'm buried, touching the deepest part of her. I feel her hand on my jaw and open my eyes. She's still wearing the necklace. It shines in the moonlight, but not as brightly as her eyes.
Ask me again, Nicholas.
Hope whispers. Blessed, beautiful, thrilling hope.
Stay.
A soft-lipped smile.
For how long?
My voice is hushed and rough with pleading.
For always.
Olivia looks deep into my eyes, and her smile grows, her head bobbing in the tiniest of knots.
Yes.
Chapter 23. Olivia. Nicholas is practically giddy the next morning. We both are, kissing and laughing. We can't keep our hands off each other. Because it's a new day. I never really understood that expression before. I mean, isn't every day a new day? But now I get it. Because our future, whatever that future may hold, starts today. And Nicholas and I are walking into it together. We have breakfast in his room. We take a long shower together, hot in more ways than one. We finally put our clothes on and venture out late in the afternoon. Nicholas wants to take me biking again. But when we make it downstairs, Winston, the head dark suit, as Nicholas calls him, is waiting for us.
There's a matter we must speak of, Your Grace, he tells Nicholas, not looking at me at all.
Nicholas's thumb slowly caresses the back of my hand.
We're just on our way out, Winston. Can it wait?
I'm afraid not. It's rather urgent.
Nicholas sighs, and I try to be helpful. I'll hang out in the library until you're done. He nods.
All right.
He kisses my lips, softly, quickly, and then goes to do what he needs to do. About 45 minutes later, I'm still in the majestic palace library. It's two stories, with gleaming wood that smells like lemon polish, the shelves packed with one ancient-looking leather-bound title after another. I flip through a copy of Sense and Sensibility, not really reading the words.
We're ready for you now, Miss Hammond.
My head snaps up to find Winston looking down at me, his hands clasped behind his back. What do you mean, ready for me? This guy's poker face is epic. And more than a little freaky. His mouth is relaxed, his eyes impassive. It's the face of a mannequin, or a very good, very cold hitman.
This way, please.
Nicholas. Olivia steps into the room, looking curious and so very tiny next to Winston's girth. Her eyes drift over Henry in the leather chair by the fireplace. Then she smiles when she sees me across the room. What's going on? I search her face and my own memory, looking for some sign I missed, something that would have made me suspect. But there's nothing. Olivia worries her lip, staring at my blank expression. Winston swivels the computer screen on the desk towards her. These are the headlines that will run in the Daily Star. It's a tabloid. His Royal Hotness's unwanted secret heir. Royal teen pregnancy ends in miscarriage. All the details. Her face pinches in horror.
Oh, no! How did they find out?
We were hoping you could explain that to us, Miss Hammond, Winston says, since you are the one who told them. I hate that I agreed to this. Agree to let Winston take the lead, do the questioning.
What are you talking about?
Olivia turns my way again.
Nicholas?
Winston slides a sheet of paper in front of her. She stares at it hard, brow wrinkling with concentration.
What is this?
It's a mortgage statement for Amelia's, for the building of the coffee shop and Olivia's apartment in New York. That was in foreclosure 5 months ago. It was paid off in full last week. Winston tells Olivia as much.
I don't understand. I just spoke to Ellie yesterday. She didn't say anything.
She takes a step closer to me.
Nicholas, you can't really believe I would do this.
My gut rebels at the idea, but the black and white evidence taunts me. I'm not accusing you.
Yeah, but you're not exactly defending me either.
I take the paper off the table. Explain this to me. Make it make sense. Even to my own ears, it sounds like begging. Make me understand what happened. She shakes her head.
I can't.
It's like 1,000 weights are sitting on my shoulders, bending my spine, trying to snap me in half. I would forgive you for anything, Olivia. Did you know that? Anything. But I won't be lied to.
I'm not lying.
Maybe you told someone accidentally. Maybe you mentioned it to your sister, or Marty, or your father. She takes a step backwards.
I'm not a scumbag, but my family is.
I didn't say that.
That's exactly what you said.
I throw the bank statement on the table. For 10 years, there hasn't been a whisper of this in the press. Then weeks after I tell you, it splashed across the papers, and it just so happens your family's mortgage is paid off at the same time. What am I supposed to think? Olivia flinches, running her hand over her forehead.
I don't know what to say.
My voice booms.
Tell me you didn't do this!
She looks me right in the eye, chin raised, eyes simmering.
I didn't do this.
But then, when I don't say anything, her face falls like a collapsing castle of cards.
You don't believe me.
I look away. Put yourself in my place.
I'm trying to.
Her lip trembles.
But I would believe you, so I can't.
She shakes her head.
When have I ever given you a reason to think I want money out of this?
Maybe you weren't after money. In the beginning,
Winston interjects, like a barrister setting up a question during a trial.
But then you came here and saw firsthand the wealth that was to be had. Perhaps with your departure so close, you made the choice to get what you could while you could.
Shut your mouth!
Olivia lunges at him, but I grab her arm, pulling her back.
That's enough!
Our eyes meet, hers so big and begging, begging for me to believe her. And Christ, I want to. But uncertainty twists my heart around in my chest, making it hard to breathe.
I'll call my father, Olivia declares. He'll tell you it's a mistake.
She slides her phone out of her pocket. Dials and waits. After what seems like fucking forever, she looks up at me, nervously.
There's no answer. I'll keep trying.
While she redials, I ask Winston, where did the money come from?
We haven't been able to trace the transfer yet. We're working on it.
My voice is strong, commanding.
I need that information, Winston. It's the only way to know for sure.
Slowly, Olivia lowers the phone from her ear, and she looks at me, staring, like I'm a stranger. No, worse, like I'm a monster.
After everything that's happened, everything I'm willing to give up for you, everything we've said and been to each other for the last 5 months, you need more information? Until you can decide if I'm the type of person who would take one of the most painful secrets of your life and sell it to a supermarket rag?
There's a warning voice that tells me to stop. All of this, right here, right now. Go no farther. It says I have no reason not to trust her, that she could never do this to me. Not the Olivia I know. But I turn deaf ears on that voice. Because it lies. I've listened to it before,
over and over again when I was young and stupid and wrong. I won't be wrong again. Not about this. Not about her. It would break me. My face feels like a mask, stone cold and blank. Yes, I need more information. And she shatters, like a window pane that's been struck by a fist, right in front of me.
Fuck you!
She steps back, yelling and crying and shaking her head.
Fuck you and this fucked up place that raised you! You're so messed up. You're so warped inside. Because of these games and these people. You can't even see it. And I can't stand to look at you right now.
Then leave, I shout back. There's the door. Get out. If I'm so hard to look at, go back to fucking New York. The second the words leave my mouth, I want to snatch them back. I don't mean them. But words don't work that way. Once heard, they can't ever be taken back. All they can do is echo. The color drains from Olivia's cheeks and her eyes close. Her face turns towards the floor and her shoulders drop, like she's done, like there's nothing left to her at all. She takes a shuddering breath and without raising her head, without looking at me even one more time, she turns and walks out. For a full minute, no one speaks. I stand there, like an idiot, staring at the space where she just stood. Henry's words fill the silence. You're making a mistake, and that was harsh, Nicholas, even for you. I face Winston. Find out where the money came from. Now! Winston bows and leaves. I feel Henry's eyes on the back of my head, but I don't turn around. I have nothing to say. He doesn't feel the same. Hello! He comes around and tries to knock on my head. Is anyone alive in there? Who are you right now? He seems different to me somehow. Taller or older. More serious. I don't know why I didn't notice before. Or why the hell I'm seeing it now. What are you going on about? Well, you look like my brother and you sound like him. But you're not him. You're some alternate version of him. The one who gives all those scripted, meaningless answers in interviews. The Tin Man. I'm not in the mood to play games with you, Henry. He goes on like I haven't spoken at all. My real brother would know that Olivia wouldn't, couldn't do this. He'd know it in here. He pokes my chest. So either you're too afraid to trust your own instincts, or you're too afraid to trust her. But either way, you just let the best damn thing that's ever happened to you walk right out the door. And with the lives we have, that's really saying something. I swallow hard, feeling cold and numb inside, feeling nothing. My voice is as hollow as my chest. If she didn't do it, it's one hell of a coincidence. I'll know what to do once Winston gets more information.
It'll be too late, then!
I don't say another word. I'm done discussing this. But my brother isn't quite finished.
There have been many times in my life when I thought Mum would be ashamed of me. This is the first time I've ever thought she'd be ashamed of you.
And then he walks away, too.
Olivia. I don't take a breath on the way back to my room. I'll lose it if I do. So I bite my lip and wrap my arms around my waist, passing security men in the halls, nodding to maids. But as soon as I'm through the door, I let go. The sobs tear out of me, shaking my shoulders and scraping my lungs. It's rage and devastation mixed together. The worst kind of heartbreak. How could he do this? After everything I've done, everything I was willing to do for him. I saw it in his eyes, those gorgeous, tortured eyes. He wanted to believe me.
but he didn't. Couldn't. Whatever tiny wick of trust still lives inside him has been burned one too many times. Did he ever really trust me? Did he ever believe that we could last? For always? Or was some part of him just waiting, watching, until I screwed him over? Well, fuck him. Fuck him and his fucking palace. No more. I'm done.
Can I bring you some tea, Miss Hammond?
I gasp loudly, and I think my heart stops. It's the maid for my room. Melly, I think her name is. I didn't see her when I first walked in because I was crying into my hands. Her fresh face is awash with sympathy, but I'm tired of being surrounded, sick of the maids and the security and Twitter assholes and the fucking secretaries and assistants. I just want to be alone. I want to crawl into a corner where no one can see me or hear me so I can breathe and cry my fucking eyes out. A hiccup rattles through my chest.
No. No, thank you.
She nods, eyes down, like a good little servant. She slips past me discreetly, closing the door behind her, trained oh so well. I lock the door. Then I march to the bookcase that connects this room to Nicholas's and lock that, too. I walk into the bathroom and turn the shower on to scalding. As the steam rises around me, I strip out of my clothes, choking on my tears. I step into the shower, slide down to the floor, and rest my forehead on my knees. And as the water pounds down over me, I let it all pour out.
Nicholas. I visited a children's hospital ward once, in a facility that specialized in treating the rarest, most confounding disorders. There was a young girl there, a tiny, bandaged, pretty thing, who was unable to feel pain. Something to do with how her nerves communicated with her brain. At first glance, you would think a life without pain would be a blessing. She'd never have a toothache, a stomachache. Her parents would never have to dry her tears after a knee-scraping stumble. But pain is actually a gift. A warning that something is amiss, and action must be taken to correct the situation. Without pain, an otherwise minor injury could lead to deadly consequences. Guilt works the same way. It's a signal from the conscience that something is terribly wrong. Mine eats at me, one slow, sharp bite at a time, in the minutes that I stay in the empty office. It claws at the lining of my gut when I make my way back to my room. It gathers in my throat when I pour myself a brandy, making it almost impossible to swallow it down. I can't shake it. Can't stop seeing it. The last look on Olivia's face. Defeated. Crushed. It shouldn't feel like this. I'm the injured party. I'm the one who's been lied to. Betrayed. Then why do I feel so fucking guilty? It stabs at me like the jagged edge of a broken rib. The glass clinks when I set it on the table. Then walk to the bookcase and through the corridor that leads to Olivia's room. But when I push on the bookcase on the other side, it doesn't give. Doesn't move an inch. I'd forgotten about the latch. My mother installed it herself. It was the only time I'd ever seen her with a screwdriver in her hand, and the only time I'd ever heard her refer to my father as a fucking wanker. They'd patched up whatever they'd been arguing about. But the latch had stayed, and was apparently now being put back to use. I push at my hair and stalk out of the room into the hall, down to Olivia's door. I rap on it hard, but there's no answer. A young maid nods to me as she passes, and my chin jerks in response. I try the handle, but that door is also locked, so I knock again. Working hard to tamp down the pissed-offness growing with every second.
Olivia, I'd like to speak with you.
I wait, but there's no response.
Olivia!
I knock again.
Things got out of hand earlier, and I want to talk to you about it. Could you please open the door?
When a security guard strolls past, I feel like a fucking idiot. And that's just how I must look. knocking and pleading outside a door in my own bloody house. This time I pound on the door with the side of my fist.
Olivia!
30 seconds later, when there's still no answer, my guilt goes up in smoke.
All right,
I hiss at the closed door.
Have it your way.
I stalk down the stairs, spotting Fergus in the foyer.
Have the car brought around. Where are you going?
Out.
When will you return?
Late. His gaze rakes over me.
Seems like a damn stupid thing to do.
Turns out, I've been doing damn stupid things for the last 5 months. I step out through the door.
Why stop now?
Olivia. I put on my own clothes after my shower, my real clothes, worn gray sweatpants and a white V-neck t-shirt. I don't dry my hair, but twist it up into a bun, wet, on top of my head. My eyes feel puffy and swollen and probably look even worse. I drag my suitcases out from the closet and start packing, being sure to leave every single piece of clothing Sabine, the stylist, brought for me. They already think I'm a gold digger. I'll be damned if I give them any more ammunition. When I'm done, I mean to walk down to the travel secretary's office to get a car to the airport and a ticket home. But my legs have other ideas. They bring me through the bookcase to Nicholas's room. It's silent, in that way you can feel there's no one in it. I see a glass of brandy on the table. I touch it with my fingertips, because he touched it. Then I walk over to his bed, that big, beautiful bed. I sink my face into Nicholas's pillow, deeply inhaling his scent, that amazing man scent that's all him, a hint of ocean and spice. It makes my skin tingle. It makes my eyes burn. I thought I was all cried out, but I guess not. With a shuddering breath, I put the pillow back.
"He's not here, miss," Fergus says from the doorway. "He left earlier."
Did he say where he was going?
No.
I walk up to the brittle, sweet man. You were kind to me the whole time I was here. Thank you for that. As I turn to go, his hand falls on my arm.
He's a good lad. He can be rash at times, but he has his reasons. Let him come to his senses. He loves you, lass. As the day is long, he loves you. Don't rush off just now. Give him a bit more time.
The Queen's words echo in my head. Time won't make this better, Fergus. I lean over and kiss his wrinkled cheek. Goodbye. Jane Stiltonhouse, the travel secretary, is at her desk when I fill her doorway. I'm ready to go home now. She's surprised at first, and then elated.
Marvelous!
Jane rises from her chair and slips a folder out from one of the drawers.
I have your first-class ticket to New York ready, courtesy of the palace, of course. I'll send two girls to Guthrie House to pack your things.
You don't have to do that. I already packed. Her smile reminds me of poisonous fruit, dangerously sweet. Anything provided by the palace to you on loan, gowns, jewels, etc., etc., remains with the palace. The only thing I planned on taking was the necklace Nicholas gave me. She clasps her hands.
Precisely. The necklace must remain here.
Those words hit me like a subway turnstile jamming into my stomach. But Nicholas designed it for me. Prince Nicholas had the necklace commissioned, and he is a member of the royal family. Therefore, it is the property of the crown. It stays. He gave it to me. One of her pointy, penciled eyebrows rises nastily. And soon he may give it to someone else. It stays. Are we going to have a problem, Miss Hammond? I'd like to show her how we solve problems like her where I come from. But I don't. Because, really, what difference does it make?
No, Miss Stiltonhouse. There's no problem.
And her mouth does a fabulous impression of Bruce the Shark from Finding Nemo.
Very good. The driver will have your ticket. Be sure to bring your passport. Do come visit again.
Her condemning gaze combs over my clothes.
if you ever have the means. And I can't leave this place fast enough.
Chapter 24 Nicholas. That night, after a lonesome evening spent drinking myself into oblivion in a corner at the Goat, I don't dream about my mother, like I did the last time I was good and pissed. I dream I'm on a ship, a creaky wooden pirate ship, with a stunning dark-haired figurehead with perfect pale breasts, in the middle of a giant storm, being tossed left and right, until one mighty, surging wave topples the whole thing over, sending me reeling into the sea. When I crack my head on the hard wooden floor, I realize I'm not on a ship, and the tossing wasn't a dream. It was my little brother, tilting the couch I passed out on and spilling my sorry ass onto the bloody floor. When I'm able to pry my eyes open, I see him standing over me like an angel of morning after doom, with Simon standing next to him.
What the fucking fuck, Henry?
I told you you were wrong. I told you Olivia didn't do it. Those words snap me into full, immediate consciousness. Henry's eyes dart to Simon. Tell him. Simon looks pale, paler than usual, and not a little bit guilty.
Tell me what? I rasp.
He clears his throat.
Yes. Well, you see, I've begun a new business venture for barristers.
When he doesn't continue, I nudge.
And pies.
Maybe I am still dreaming after all.
Pies. Yes, fresh and flash frozen. They'll be deliverable to any place in the world. We're going to knock Marie Callender's and Sarah Lee on their asses. And you know how much I enjoyed the pies at Amelia's when we were in the States. So, I purchased the recipes from Olivia's father. All of them.
My stomach is still stuck in the dream. It churns.
How much? Over six figures.
Slowly, I sit up, anger rising.
And you didn't think this was something you should have told me?
He rubs the back of his neck.
Mr. Hammond wanted it kept quiet. He's been cleaning himself up, doing the 12 steps and all that. He wanted to surprise Olivia when she came home that the business was out of debt, and she wouldn't have to run it all on her own any more.
Simon squirms.
And hell, I can never keep a secret from Franny, so I thought it best if you didn't...
His words trail off as he looks me over.
What did you do, Nick?
What did I do? The realization of what I have done lands like a moose kick to the balls. I'm on my feet in an instant, and with the awful words I threw at her ringing in my ears, I run down the hall, shirt open, feet bare. But the moment my hands touch the handles, before I even open the doors, I know. I can feel it. She's not here. I stand in the middle of Olivia's room. That's how I think of it now. Not the white bedroom, or my mother's old room. It's Olivia's. Now, it's Olivia's empty room. The bed is made, but vacant. The white walls and furniture that looked so pristine and fair yesterday now seem grey and lifeless. I check the bathroom and the closet. I don't know why, but except for a few designer outfits encased in clear plastic that I know aren't Olivia's, they're just as bare as all the rest. Any trace of her, her shampoos and trinkets, and the little hair ties she's always leaving behind, have been wiped away. Like she was never here at all. I wander back into the bedroom, and a shiny glinting on the dresser catches my eye. The snowflake necklace. It was hers. It was made for her. I gave it to her to keep. To have and to hold. Even that was selfish of me, I guess.
I liked the idea of her having something tangible, something she could touch, a way for her to remember me, after. And she left it behind. A message doesn't get more loud and clear than that. A maid walks past the open door in the hall, and I bark at her.
Get Winston here! Now!
I hold the necklace in the palm of my hand when Henry and Simon, and then Fergus, walk in.
When?
I ask my butler.
Miss Olivia left last night.
Why wasn't I told?
You told her to go. I heard you tell her myself. The whole house heard you yell it.
I flinch.
Just following orders.
And his words drip with sarcasm. Not today, old man. Winston steps into the room, his lips etched in that constant, self-important smirk, and I want to punch it off his face. Why didn't I do that yesterday, when he suggested that Olivia would ever... Fucking hell, I'm an idiot.
Bring her back!
She's arrived in New York by now, Fergus says.
Then bring her back from New York.
She left, Nicholas,
Simon points out. And Henry begins.
You can't just... Bring her back!
I shout, loud enough to make the frames on the walls tremble.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
Henry grips my shoulders.
You tell the men to bring her back, and they will bring her back by any means necessary. And then we'll add international kidnapper to your resume. She's not a bone, Nicholas. You can't order her to be fetched.
I can do whatever I want, I hiss.
Bloody hell,
Henry curses.
Is this what I sound like?
Panic. It rises like smoke up my throat, choking me, making my hands clench the pendant like a life preserver, making me think wild thoughts and say idiotic things. Because what if Olivia won't come back? What will I do then? Without her? My voice turns to ash.
She'll come back with them. They'll explain it to her. Tell her that I made a mistake. That I'm sorry.
My little brother looks at me like I've lost my mind. And maybe I have. Simon steps forward, gripping my arm.
Tell her yourself, man.
The downside of responsibility and duty is that it gives you tunnel vision. You don't see the big picture, the options, because the options were never yours to have. You see only the track that you're locked onto, the one that takes you through the tunnel. But every once in a while, even the most dependable trains jump their track.
Prince Nicholas, you can't go in there!
Christopher rushes out from behind his desk, trying to get between me and the Queen's closed office door.
Your Highness, please!
I burst through the door. The Japanese Emperor stands quickly, and his security men go for their gun belts. The Emperor holds out his hand to them. I see this all in the periphery, because my eyes are fastened onto the Queen's, and if looks could kill, Henry would have just gotten a promotion.
I'm cancelling the press conference, I tell her.
Without blinking, she turns smoothly to her guest.
Please accept our sincere apologies for the interruption, Emperor Himura. There is no excuse for such rudeness.
The Emperor nods.
I have 6 children, Your Majesty. I understand all about interruptions.
He glances my way on the last word, and reflexively I lower my chin and bow, a sign of respect. My grandmother looks past my shoulder to the doorway.
Christopher, show Emperor Himura to the blue drawing room. I will join him momentarily.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Once my grandmother and I are alone, her indifferent facade drops like a boulder catapulted over an enemy's wall.
Have you lost your mind?
I'm cancelling the press conference.
Absolutely not.
I'm going to New York to see Olivia. I've hurt her terribly.
Out of the question,
she hisses, eyes glinting like the edge of a blade.
I've done everything you've ever wanted. I've become everything you wanted me to be, and I've never asked you for anything. But I'm asking you for this.
Something cracks inside me, making my voice splinter.
I love her. It can't end this way.
She regards me silently for several moments, and when she speaks, her voice is gentler, but still resolute.
This is exactly how it needs to end. Do you think I'm a fool, Nicholas? That I didn't know what you were thinking?
I open my mouth to reply, but she goes on.
You thought you could postpone the wedding for a time, and perhaps you could have. But the fact remains, the day will come when you will be a husband and a father. You will be a king. What will Olivia be then?
Mine, I growl. She'll be mine.
I see her in my head, those smiling, rosy lips, the way her eyes dance when she looks at me, when she's happy, when I've made her happy. I think of the way her thick, dark lashes fan out against her perfect skin while she sleeps, peacefully, because she's sleeping in my arms. I remember the feel of her soft touch and the sheer, miraculous contentment I feel when I'm just lying beside her.
The word mistress doesn't carry the same weight it once did, but it is still not a pretty thing to be, Nicholas. And there are no secrets, not in this world, not any more. You will have a purpose to fulfill, a destiny. You will have the admiration and devotion of a country, and Olivia will have its scorn, possibly the derision of the whole world. You've seen it play out, time and again. The nannies who take up with their married movie star employers, the young interns ensnared by powerful men. It's never the man who is shamed and ruined. It's always the woman, the other woman, who gets burned at the stake.
And I have no response, because I didn't think that far. The future didn't matter. All that mattered was having Olivia, keeping her, being able to kiss her every morning and tell her, show her, how precious she was to me every night. My grandmother's brows draw together, as if she's aggrieved.
Are you really so selfish, my boy? Is that the life you want for her?
The life I want for her? I want the world for Olivia. I want to show her every corner of it, explore it while holding her hand. I want the stars for her, and the moon and the heavens, and everything in between. And for a moment, I truly thought I could give them to her. I believed there was a way. Stupid. Franny called me a fool, a double-damned idiot. For once, I agree with her. When I answer, my voice is hollow, a ravaged, empty imitation of my own. No.
Then let her go. If you truly love her, let her hate you. It will be easier for her that way.
She puts her hand on my arm, squeezing with a strength that still surprises me.
And for you.
I rub my eyes, suddenly so tired.
Christopher has the list. I've narrowed it down to 5. Look it over. They're wonderful women, Nicholas. Any one of them will make you happy, if you just allow it.
I move out of her office without another word, feeling dazed. I pause in front of Christopher's desk, and he hands me the list. 1 page, 5 names, 5 pretty, smiling thumb-size faces. All the same, all meaningless.
Swallowing hard, I pass it back to the Queen's secretary. Pick one. His eyes jolt from me to the page and back again.
Me?
Yes.
Which one should I pick, Your Grace?
And I say the truest words I've ever spoken in my life. It doesn't matter.
Chapter 25. Olivia. The months I spent in Wesco flew by in a blink, in a snap of fingers, the way time always seems to move when you're happiest. But the last 2 days have limped, crawled by in endless, teeth-gnashingly painful seconds. I thought leaving Wesco was the hardest thing I'd ever do. But I was wrong. Living without Nicholas is so much harder. I called Ellie from the airport, told her I was coming home, asked her to meet me when I landed. But when I walked out of the gate, it wasn't her that was there. It was my dad. His eyes were clear, sober and strong, and knowing. I was already crying by the time he got to me. I didn't even try to hold back. He told me it would be okay. He promised that I would be all right. He said I was strong, like my mother, and that I would get through this. He rocked me in his arms and held me so tight. My hero. But it's been a struggle. I have to fight the urge to curl into a ball and cry because everything hurts. My chest is heavy with the weight of my heart. My head throbs with doubts, all the things I could have done differently. My arms and legs ache with the urge to run back to him, to fix it, to hug him and never, ever let him go. My stomach is twisted and nauseated. So sick that for a split second yesterday, I considered the possibility that maybe I was pregnant, and that fleeting thought brought relief and joy. It's the worst reason to want a baby, but it would mean we'd still have a connection, and I'd have a reason to go back, to see him again. I know I sound like a desperate, pathetic woman, but I just don't care. Having your heart ripped out of your chest will do that to you. It's too early for morning sickness, but even if it weren't, I know I'm not pregnant. Those magical fixes happen only in romance novels and on soap operas. In real life, birth control is reliably, sometimes heartbreakingly effective. It's really you! Oh my God, can I get a picture? The statuesque 20-something woman vibrating beside me asks. No, sorry, no pictures, I mumble, staring at the dirty plates in my hands. Business is booming. The line at Amelia's is out the door and down the block. They're not here for the pies. My father filled me in on his covert business deal with Simon Barrister the night I came home. The contract is exclusive, which means we're out of the pie business for good. And I'm happy about that. I am. Happy that my father is sober and healthy. Happy that Ellie will be able to go to college without the weight of money troubles on her back. Happy even for me. That I have choices now. That my life won't be spent doing something I hate for the family I love. But Nicholas was right. Everyone has a price, and everything is for sale. The crowd that fills the coffee shop every day is looking for a piece of Nicholas. They all want to see the table he sat at. Ellie screwed a plaque into the back of one of the chairs. His royal ass was here. Beside it, Marty scratched into the wood, and it was fine. I don't do autographs or pictures, but that doesn't stop people from asking. I've been working every day, trying to stay busy, but I mostly stay in the back, away from all the greedy eyes and prying questions. I dump the dishes into the sink in the kitchen, while the dishwasher wanted sign still hangs, unclaimed, in the front window. The chatter of the crowd out front is so loud that I don't hear the person behind me come in, not until I turn around and run smack into his chest. Logan steadies me with a hand on my elbow. Pardon me, Miss Olivia. That awful tight feeling pinches my chest, because looking at his face drums up memories that pound their way through my head. Why are you here, Logan? He gives me a confused look. It's my shift. Tommy has the day off. No, I mean, why are you still here? There hasn't been a word from Nicholas, not a call or a text.
I expected Logan and Tommy to head back to Wesco as soon as it was clear I was back, for good. His mouth tightens, and sympathy dims in his eyes. Prince Nicholas asked me.